go to a different room.
Climb out the window.
I need to climb out the window.
Yay.
I need to do whatever it is that I need to do so that we can come back.
You can hear more about loving your spouse from Tara Lalonde at FamilyMinute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
Now, The Rest of the Story. How does a reporter emotionally handle the disasters on which he reports? Well, it would seem some newsmen and newswomen actually thrive on them. I want you to meet Kathy Kidrick, alias Calamity Kathy. She's been covering national disasters for 15 years now, the biggest of the big ones, beginning with Hurricane Eloise, 1975. 25 people died on the island of Hispaniola, 34 in Puerto Rico. Hardest hit in the United States was the 50-mile resort strip between Panama City Beach, Florida, and Pensacola. 140-mile-an-hour winds, 16-foot tides, $150 million damage. And Calamity Kathy was there, talking to the disaster victims, writing the story of what hell is like from the inside. 5 years later, Mount St. Helens blew her top in the Pacific Northwest. Calamity Kathy was there, too, standing in the hail of volcanic debris, watching the plume of ashes and gases reach 15,000 feet into the sky, writing the story of what hell is like from its chimney. Later that same year, Hurricane Allen ripped the Caribbean and the Texas Gulf Coast, cutting a swath of destruction 1,200 miles long. And there, in the eye of the storm in Corpus Christi, was Calamity Kathy interviewing the wind-ravaged citizens. Kathy also covered the hurricane that slammed into Hawaii in 1982. Iwa, I-W-A, was her name. It would cost some $200 million to clean up after her. And then Coalinga, the 6.5 monster earthquake that rocked Central California. Coalinga. Closest to the epicenter was the town for which the quake was named, a community of 7,000 who were driven from their homes as the business district fell flat to the ground. Electricity, gas, telephone service were wiped out in less than 30 seconds, leaving the citizenry stunned and hurting. And Calamity Kathy was there to record the story. Finally, San Francisco, October 1989, the night that became a nightmare. Millions watched the World Series on television. They were among the first to learn of the earthquake, but Calamity Kathy was on the scene, toughing it out magnificently as always and returning to the world of the living to tell the tale. But the rest of the story is that Calamity Kathy Kidrick is not a professional reporter, rather an amateur chronicler of the most spectacular natural disasters in recent American history. Kathy is otherwise a mother, a wife of a peripatetic Navy pilot. And yet if her husband's job explains why she is always moving, it does not explain why she's always moving to the most dangerous place on the planet. For Kathy Kidrick travels to the scenes of our greatest natural disasters before they occur. A calamitous coincidence, it's been called. Well, three hurricanes, two major earthquakes, a volcanic eruption. Kathy has moved directly into the path of each before each happened, only to stand once again midst the rubble and to record the emotions of her neighbors in her private journal. In fact, after her own house in Alameda was leveled during the San Francisco quake last October, her own house was leveled, Kathy was going to move in with relatives. But the homes of the relatives, the homes of her parents and brothers and sisters in Charleston, South Carolina, were so badly wrecked by the Hurricane Hugo days before that there was no place for her to stay. And one thing more. Kathy's husband today is being transferred to Fallon, Nevada, to the Naval Air Base there. His wife and his children will soon follow. If you are living in Fallon, Nevada right now, I thought you'd want to know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL.
Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Okay, we're back, and the phone lines are open, 238-5775. We've been talking about drones. We've been talking about some other things. I was just trying to finish up talking about Daniel Penning, his acquittal, the injustice of New York City. That is an extremely far-left community. The persecution of Penny is very similar to the persecution of Donald Trump, the same prosecutors, district attorneys going after this man. And what people don't realize, well, Daniel Penny was white. He was assisted by another black man and an Hispanic man in holding Mr. Neely down and restraining him until the police arrived. He was not dead when the police arrived. He died later, probably as a result, complications, not just of being choked out, but of the drugs he was on. He was on K2, which gives people almost superhuman strength. Penny, who is not a small man, he's a former Marine, struggled mightily to restrain him. He says he lifted him literally up off the floor. He was pushing so hard, all he could do to keep him restrained. But anyway, if you're black and you get into trouble in New York City, you're probably going to be okay. If you're white, don't take the subway. In fact, I would just stay out of New York City completely, because right now there's two systems of justice in play. One's injustice, and that applies basically to people of preferred racial makeup. The system, the people that run that city have run it into the ground. It was once a very great city. Now it's not safe to really walk the streets or go anywhere there, and that's really sad. Then you have the murder of Brian Thompson, also in New York City. He runs United Healthcare. That was my insurance company. And it turns out, we find out, and we said this guy that murdered him, I can't pronounce his last name. But the bottom line is, this guy was not a recipient of United Healthcare. He did not have any policies with him. He decided to select an insurance executive at random, for whatever reason known only to him, and murder him in cold blood. And you got people on the internet right now going out and saying, oh, well, he probably had it coming. He's one of those insurance guys, you know. Well, the insurance industry is heavily regulated by the government, and a lot of the problems they have are government regulations that interfere with the market. And, you know, you're taking a risk that you're not going to die and not get hurt. Big insurance pools, some people are. They make payouts, then they've got a regulator to go out of business. The bottom line is, though, we can fix problems. We can fix it through legislation. We can fix it through protests and things like that and activism. Violence is not called for here. Now, I know America was founded on a revolution, but it was founded after many, many attempts to redress grievances peacefully, somewhat peacefully for the most part. Petitioning the kings, petitioning the parliament, things like that. And the leaders of the nation, of the colonies, did that. And we didn't fire the first shots. They fired on us. They shot people down in the streets. They denied people their rights as Englishmen, shipped back to England on trumped-up charges in many cases, simply defending themselves, their families. They had outrages against the women of this country, of the colonies. And they were not being punished. You get to a point where you don't have rights. You have no ability to redress. And they turn their guns on you, like Iran does to its citizens. When they protest in the streets, they have security forces that machine gun people down in the streets. China does that. Then you have a right to use violence to overthrow a government. But that's very, very rare. They don't usually turn out well for anybody, because you never know who's going to come up on top. And it's not something done lightly. It's not something for some individual to go out and just pick somebody at random and shoot them in the back. This guy stalked him for over 10 days. He had no idea, Mr. Thompson had no idea that his life was in danger. He didn't even have a security detail. A lot of these big companies have security details. He knew where he was coming. He may have had help. How did he know that he was going to be in that hotel on that day at that time? How did he know what route he would take? I mean, I think this guy had help from someone somewhere. Just my opinion. But the bottom line is, it's a heinous crime, and I'm really regretting that New York State abolished its death penalty, because Sing Sing Prison used to have just a really perfect device for people like this guy called an electric chair. You just put it on slow burn and let them think about it for a while. Because this man left behind, Mr. Thompson left behind a wife and two teenage sons, and his children will never see him again. It's just a week and a half before Christmas, 2 weeks before Christmas this happened. I mean, what a thing to happen to a family. It's bad enough when it's an accident, or a heart attack and things like that. And my family's gone through that. A lot of families have gone through that. And on the holidays, it really hits home in your heart. But to have something like this happen for this reason, and to have these jerks on the internet, the same people who applauded Hamas when they slaughtered Jews on October 7, 2023 in Israel, slaughtered men, women, children in the most barbaric, savage ways imaginable, and unimaginable horrors inflicted on those people. Same people in this country think that's great. These college students out there celebrating, well, they're on the internet right now thinking the killing of this executive is a good thing. Let me tell you something else. This kid that did this came from a privileged background. He had money. He had a great education, University of Pennsylvania, bachelor's, a master's degree, valedictorian of his high school. He had everything going for him. Thompson, by contrast, came up from the bottom. He worked his way up from the bottom, from working class background to the executive of a major insurance company. He did it the hard way, and this punk had the temerity to go out there and thought that, you know, self-righteously, still self-righteously smug, saying he's doing a good thing and he should be praised as a hero because he murdered an innocent man for all practical purposes. He murdered a man because of the occupation he was in, which, by the way, I have the insurance and they cover just about everything. It's a really great company from my perspective. And I have no economic interest other than the fact that I buy their insurance policies. They provide my medical coverage. Done a good job. But this is not something that can go on. I'm worried about jury nullification. They're actually talking about it. A jury may look at this, ignore the facts, and refuse to convict this guy. Right now, he's fighting extradition to New York State. I hope he is extradited to New York State because in Pennsylvania, they're holding him only on weapons charges. New York State, he's facing life in prison without parole. And I hope he enjoys every single second of it when he meets some of his roommates there, who probably aren't quite as intelligent and cultured as he is. What else is going on in the world? Oh, let's see. We got a lot of national security stuff going on. I know we're talking about drones before. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Quick question. With the media, and I also heard a couple statements that you mentioned, I was wondering how come everybody has gone, this is at the Luigi Mangione,
yeah.
How come everybody has immediately tried and convicted him in the media, but yet if you listen to his lawyer, still to this day, he has not received any evidence putting him at the scene, nor any evidence linking him to the crime. So the only reason why they arrested him is because of his weapons charge. So I was wondering, how come all the media right now is convicting him and trying him in the media when the guy hasn't even been linked to the murder itself?
Well, the media is simply parroting what they're being told. What has been released so far, they've done ballistic tests. The gun in his possession was the gun that murdered Brian Thompson. They did find his fingerprint.
But his lawyer says no.
Well, his lawyer is saying that he hasn't
received any evidence on that part.
Well,
like, if you watch the interviews with his lawyer.
Okay, I've heard some of that on the air. The lawyer has not received the evidence yet. True. He through the discovery process, they have to provide all of that to him. Law enforcement agencies have all come out and made these press releases and said, we've got the gun. The gun matches the ballistics, the bullet that was fired into Thompson. They've got fingerprints. They got DNA placing him at the scene. They got other photographic evidence that places him at the scene. They have witnesses that place him at the scene. So right now, it's more of a formality. Now, it has to go through all the process. The lawyer will get all this evidence. He can look at it. He can try to challenge it if he wants. He'll probably try to suppress some. I don't think that will work. But right now, you've got hard physical forensic evidence linking him to that scene. You've also got a manifesto that the kid wrote, practically admissions, practically boasting of what he did. He's a good guy. Very arrogant, very smug, very snarky when he was taken into custody, when he's trying to talk to the media. Uncooperative. He's not cooperating at all. If I was innocent of something like this, I'd say, here's my computer, here's my phones. I was someplace else. You got the wrong guy. This guy's locked everything up with very secure crypto.
He did say justice will be served, and when he was going into the courtroom, and he said, "Don't question the American intelligence." So he's saying that there's more to the story, and
well, there may be.
He is posting on YouTube from prison or jail or wherever he's at that he is innocent. There is somebody else. And it's kind of strange that he's still posting on YouTube, but they said they're time releases, I guess, or some sort.
They must be time releases because I don't think he has access to computers or phones or anything else when he's in custody. They don't let them do that kind of stuff. So there may be more than one person involved. He may not be the only person. Probably isn't, mm-hmm. but right now we don't know who that is. And maybe he'll cooperate at some point. If he gets sent back to New York, he's facing life without parole. That's when you make deals. Okay, I did mm-hmm. this and this and this, but I'm not alone. Or sure. he may not ever say anything, try to be a martyr and go down thinking he's a hero. He's not a hero in my mm-hmm. mind at all.
But to circle back, the same thing happened at the Atlanta bomber, where they had all this evidence, all the videos showing him at this place. Everything was back to the Atlanta bomber. But he was actually innocent. So that's
that was a security guard.
The media
that found
is trying him and convicting him.
Yeah.
And the media is telling you we got the ballistics. Media is telling you we got all this evidence. But the lawyer has never seen any evidence.
Well, he'll see it soon enough. And it's not the media saying it. It's the law enforcement agencies at their press conferences that are saying it. The guy who was a security guard at the Atlanta bombing, that was a real tragedy where the FBI just decided this has got to be the guy. And they tried to basically build a case around him, and he was innocent. And the guy that did it was actually a guy named Eric something. He was a fugitive for 5 years living in the woods up in the Carolinas. He's the guy that actually left the backpack bomb there in Atlanta. It took a long time, but they totally destroyed this man's life. You made a movie about it. I think he died some years ago.
He did. He did die.
That was a real tragedy. And, you know, that's the problem, jumping to conclusions. In this case, I don't think anybody's jumped to conclusions. There's a process to go through. I think the lawyer will get everything mm-hmm. he's supposed to get. And the amount mm-hmm. of evidence they have, this is like amateur hour as far as, you know, assassinations go. This was not a professional hit by any means. He may mm-hmm. have actually made the gun. They said it's a ghost gun made on a 3D printer, which is technology I don't really quite understand. But it mm-hmm. has no serial numbers. And this guy is really tech smart. He knows how to do it. He has a master's degree in engineering. And I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
The evidence is there, and, you know, we eventually prove beyond a reasonable doubt, I just hope a jury will do their duty and not say, I don't care what the evidence is. I'm not going to convict this guy because I hate insurance companies. Mm-hmm. That would be a travesty. Mm-hmm. That would be a travesty. And it's a green light.
I'm just paralleling it with, like, the Atlanta bomber because – they had all the evidence, too. They arrested him. They had the surveillance. They had everything out there that it was him, and it wasn't him. So I'm saying, why aren't we giving that guy the same chance? Why are we convicting him already? And then now I saw yesterday in a interview that he's not even linked to the United Healthcare. He's never been a policyholder or at all. So
it's
a little stressed.
How did he get this guy's name? How did he get his itinerary? You know,
right?
I don't go around tracking insurance executives or anybody else in the business world. I wouldn't even know how to really do that. How do you travel to another city, to another state, be there 10 days and lay in wait for a guy like that and have this elaborate plan and elaborate escape plan as well without help? You know, the guy's a genius or something. I don't know. So I think there's probably possibly more people involved. We'll see. We'll have to see how it plays
out. All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you for your call. Great call. All right. So, at any rate, there's a lot of things going on in the justice system. And American people, you know, are so polarized right now. And if you're linked to one side or the other side just jumps on top of you. And, you know, personally, from what I've heard, what I've seen, I think this is the right guy. I think this is the guy that probably did it, whoever pulled that trigger and shot that poor man in the back and murdered him and destroyed his family. Because they're devastated by this. You haven't seen them on TV. And they won't be part of the trial, other than maybe sitting watching it. Their feelings don't come into play until he's been convicted, and sentencing comes up. Then they can say their piece to the court after the process has played itself out. And this is going to take a year or more, probably. And that's the way these things work before he comes to trial and everything else. Anyway, we'll see how this goes. Other things happening in the world. Well, Syrian government fell this week. You say, well, so what? That's Syria. We're here. We're out of that mess. We're not in the Middle East anymore. We're still there. We got 900 soldiers on the ground in Syria. Been there for a long time working with special forces guys, working with the Kurds and others, trying to keep playing whack-a-mole pretty much, you know, swatting ISIS down, the Islamic State, the guys that slaughtered all those tribes that weren't perfect, good little Muslims like they want them to be, taking women by the thousands. They kidnapped over 10,000 women and girls and sold them off into sexual slavery and things like that, trying to keep these people from rising again. Now, the guy that took over is kind of scary. This guy, he was linked to, here it is. Let's see, what is he linked to? His name is Al-Julani. Abu Muhammad Al-Julani spent the better part of his adult life as a jihadist mercenary. He's been active with Al-Qaeda, which is the guys that basically attacked us at 9/11, the World Trade Center, the Islamic State of Iraq, and the Al-Nusra Front, all radical Islamic terrorist organizations. Now heads Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which is, you guessed it, another U.S.-recognized foreign terrorist organization. He says he's not a terrorist anymore, but he was formerly a prisoner at Abu Ghraib and outside of Baghdad in Iraq when we were there. He was released after we left Iraq. He was released, and he's out doing the same things again. Now, here's the twist. This is connected to Ukraine. We've been providing billions and billions of aid to Ukraine. We also have special forces guys that have been training Ukrainians on how to use a lot of our equipment, including drones, to counter Russian drones. These same guys took that knowledge that we use with our special forces, and they used it to train some of these terrorists in Syria. And they are able to take that training and skills that they learned from the American army and apply it against Assad and drive him out. Now, Assad is an ally of Iran. He's an ally of Russia. And right now, last report I had, the guy is in Moscow with probably umpteen million dollars used to pay off Russian oligarchs and people like that in the security services. And he was a very bad man, and he slaughtered just tens of thousands of his own people. I don't shed any tears for Assad. His father was the same way. His family ran that country for like 60 years. They ran it into the ground. They're a bitter enemy of Israel and the West. They butchered people left and right. I mean, the whole region is basically, it's not nations. It's a bunch of tribes with flags. You know, the whole area was created artificially after the First World War by Winston Churchill and a couple of British and French diplomats. And another woman, I can't think of her name right now. I have to look it up. But the bottom line is people just drew lines in a map irrespective of what the cultures and the tribes were, created one heck of a mess. And we're living with it. We'll be back in a few minutes.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
A choppy trading session with stocks ending mixed for the day and week. Stocks hitting a snag this week as stubborn inflation is clouding the path forward for interest rates. Investors are predicting a quarter point rate cut when the Fed meets next week, but there's a belief on Wall Street that central bankers will scale back expectations for cuts next year. Tech gained today while energy lagged, and Broadcom stock rose 24%, hitting an all-time high and surpassing $1 trillion in market cap for the first time after the chipmaker posted better than expected results and projected strong demand for its artificial intelligence products. The Dow winners, United Health Group, Home Depot, and American Express. The Dow decliners, Amgen, Goldman Sachs, and Salesforce. The Dow down 86 points for its seventh straight session of losses. NASDAQ up 24. S&P 500 was flat. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, let's face it, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. There's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Tack and Shoes has everything you need to delight everyone on your shopping list. Looking for the popular Birkenstock and Blundstone styles? Tackens is stocked up big. How about genuine, cozy, comfortable sheepskin slippers and boots from Emu Australia, Bearpaw, Super Lamb, and many others? Get on down to Tackens today for the best selection and get the gifts your loved ones are sure to appreciate all year long. Tack and Shoes at the corner of 8th and Spring in Paso and 668 Marsh Street in SLO. Tackens, your gift-giving headquarters since 1937.
Hi, this is Mimi inviting you to come join us at A-Town Diner in Atascadero, where you'll find a comfortable atmosphere and a fresh home-cooked meal. We offer daily specials and have a homemade soup of the day. We offer breakfast and lunch menu all day long, so you can always experience a hearty breakfast and one of our famous Virgil burgers. Our dinner menu starts at 4 o'clock Monday through Saturday. Enjoy a malt or a shake with that meal, or top it off with a good old-fashioned banana split. We look forward to seeing you at A-Town Diner in Atascadero.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Okay, we're back. The phone lines are open, 238-5775. Just one last thing about the murder of Brian Thompson. You know, there is a woman tonight whose heart has been broken. I know there's a lot of young women, for some reason, that think this kid should be defended. For whatever reason, they think he's cute or something like that, and they say there's no evidence placing him there. When he went back to his hostel in New York not too long after the murder took place, he dropped his face mask because he was flirting with one of the young women working in the youth hostel there, and that's how they got more pictures of him. So they can place him on the scene or near the scene at the time of the killing, just so that's known. But anyway, he has broken the heart of a woman who's been married to this man for some years, raising two teenage sons. One time, he was a young, romantic love of her life. And there are real people involved in this, real catastrophes in their lives to have something like this is earth-shattering to them. And we need to keep that in mind. Don't dehumanize the family. Don't dehumanize the victim. Just look at it for what it was. It was a cold, callous, premeditated murder and executed in the most cowardly way, shooting him in the back. A man he didn't even know. And when I've read about this guy, he was actually working very hard within his own company trying to reform the healthcare system to make it more responsive and fair to its clients. And now he's dead, thanks to one man who believed, he had the arrogance to believe, that he had the right to take this person's life to make an example of him. You know, people like Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, trying to make excuses. Well, if you make people mad enough, this is like an act of violence. No, it's not. You know, I've had a lot of things happen to me in life. None of them justify what happened here. I have a caller. I'm going to go to the phones. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Al, about the drones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't we have thousands of satellites up there taking pictures full-time, real-time pictures of every area on the planet?
Well, they're up there, and they're hard to move around. I mean, they're not like, you know, a tactical aircraft flying over and taking pictures. They're looking at certain things. They're not aimed at the United States, per se. You might have some weather satellites doing that. But our satellites, you know, they have military and national intelligence interests, and they have a lot of different missions. And they look at potentially hostile places, unless they're redirected to look someplace. And they might see something, you got a problem, you know, looking at, you know, backscatter from the ground, from radar and things like that. These are small objects. They're not necessarily easily objects to stand out against the terrain on the ground. It's at night. That affects it. You could have cloud cover, all kinds of things. And it's expensive to take them off target. You know, you can take them off monitoring North Korean missile sites, or you can put them over here to monitor New Jersey because people are seeing lights in the sky. What would you do? Now, we have aircraft that could probably do some of this. I don't know how many are available for this mission at this time. They're, you know, military aircraft cost about $3,000-$4,000 an hour to fly. And again, as I said, our air defenses networks around the country are not really as robust as they were half a century ago when we were worried about bombers and stuff like that. So it's limited. And now they're saying they're civilian, they're not military, they don't pose a threat, but they're not telling us. How do they know that? And that bothers me even more.
Wait a minute. Yeah, like Kevin said this morning, so how do they know, if they don't know who, where they're coming from or who they are or what they are, then how do they know they're not posing a threat?
Well, see, you're using logic again. That's not allowed, but that's the problem. You know, when you talk to liberals, don't use facts or logic. You really confuse them. They're starting to even confuse me. But the reality is, I ask the exact same question. Well, you're saying all this stuff, they're not a threat. Well, then who are they? Tell the American people, okay, this is what's going on. This is what they're doing. They're not hurting anybody. I'm sorry if they're being noisy and waking you up at night. We'll tell them to be quieter or something like that. But I don't know. And they're not saying, and Congress is mad. You know, Chuck Schumer's on the same side as some very conservative congressmen and senators right now demanding answers from the government. And from Kirby, who's the spokesman for the White House, Admiral Kirby, and said, look, don't feed us a bunch of baloney. Tell us the truth. What's going on? Mm-hmm. And that hasn't happened yet. I think it's going to come out. I hope it comes out sooner than later because, you know, we got enough distrust of institutions in this country as it is. They need to be telling us the truth.
Yeah. I thought I heard that they were showing up on the West Coast, too. Is that true?
I heard a report this morning or some site in San Diego, but I don't know if that's fact verified or not.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks for your call. I think we have another caller. Hi, you're on the air. Hello. Okay, maybe I don't have another caller. I think that was it. Nope, don't have another caller. Anyway, you know, these are the kind of things that, that really upset people a lot. And I was talking about how our money, our troops, are training people who are potentially terrorists, who are terrorists. And that's what overthrew the Assad regime in Syria. But don't start applauding and thinking peace and freedom has come to Syria. A lot of people are going home. A lot of Syrians are. Things would be great. But, you know, the guys that are backing this guy are some of the most radical, rigid, Islamic fundamentalists as you can imagine. They're going to impose Sharia law. It's not going to be free press. It's not going to be freedom of speech. It's not going to be freedom of religion. They may allow Christian communities to live, providing they agree to be second-class citizens, subject to meaning, pay taxes or tithes to Islamic mosques and things like that to the government. They might let them go unless they don't. And there won't be any Jewish toleration of Jews there. Most of them have been driven out of these communities anyway. And a long time ago, they were forced to leave by radical Muslim communities. Bottom line is, don't think that they're our friends and don't believe these negotiations going on with Putin over Ukraine are going to come up and to work out for all of us. Putin has one objective, and that's the total capitulation of Ukraine. That's what they want. That's what they're going to do, and people need to realize that. I think Mr. Prime President Zelensky of Ukraine understands that. Today, Russia launched a massive, I mean a massive, attack against Ukraine. They used Iskander caliber Kinzhal Dagger missiles, Iranian-designed Shahed kamikaze drones, and launched from Tu-95 strategic bombers and MiG-31. So kamikaze drones against power systems, critical infrastructure in Ukraine, Ukrainian people trying to break their will and their ability to continue to fight. Maybe there'll be some kind of ceasefire, some kind of armistice that comes in the next month or so. We'll see. But things aren't great. They may stop some of the killing, may stop some of the bleeding, especially bleeding from our treasury, supporting what is basically an unwinnable war because we have not given the Ukrainians everything they need, and we're not prepared to send American forces or NATO forces into Ukraine to fight on their behalf. I personally think that the NATO European countries should really mobilize, really get their act together and tell Putin, you've gone this far, go no farther, go back to your own home, and that's it, because they have a much bigger economy, much bigger industrial base, much greater ability to manufacture weapons, if need be, to take on Putin conventionally. What they don't have is nuclear weapons of a sufficient size, quantity, or effectiveness to basically take him on should he decide to go nuclear with tactical nuclear weapons. So this is a very explosive situation. Hopefully they'll get a ceasefire, but don't have any illusions about Putin. Putin ain't going to quit. He's not going to give up, and he intends to get everything that he wants out of Ukraine. And that's a real tragedy for everybody that's concerned, because that country has been absolutely devastated. It's going to take billions and billions of dollars to rebuild it, probably decades to get it back up to where it was before all this started. And if it's under Putin, if they take big chunks of the territory, if they overthrow the government, if they take out Zelensky, if they're able to do that, they may be able to do that. He's been pretty lucky so far. But they might do that, and if that happens, who knows what's going to happen there. But I don't think it's going to be a good thing for us. What do you think about President Trump's nominees for key positions, like for Secretary of Defense, Director of National Intelligence, for Attorney General, key positions in the government? You know, the left is just having a meltdown. They think Trump's going to go out there, and he's going to send the FBI, and he's going to send U.S. Marshals. He's going to get military troops to go out, start arresting all his political enemies, throw them into concentration camps. I mean, these people really believe their propaganda. But what do you think? Now, some of the things that happened, like Pete Hegseth, has been nominated for Secretary of Defense. The guy's a major in the Army Reserve, or National Guard, I guess, now. He was a combat veteran from Iraq. I think he did two tours, got two Bronze Stars. I don't think they were for valor. I think they're for service for that. He's written a couple of books, an outstanding critic of military policies and treatment of troops, things like that. On that, I think he's right on. And he's a graduate of both Harvard and Princeton. He's got really good educational credentials. However, he's never been an executive of any large organization that I'm aware of. He has not commanded even a battalion in the Army, which is 800 or 1,000 men usually. The Pentagon has directly 800,000 civilian employees and 1.2, 1.4 military service members. It's a huge, huge organization. As I said before, it's a monster to understand. And one of the things they teach you in the Army when you go through some of your professional courses, they teach you about the budgeting system. And it's like taking a bowl of spaghetti and dumping it up down, side down on a desk, trying to figure out how everything works. Very complex. And Pentagon's, you know, defense budget and defense secretary is mostly concerned with budgets, acquisitions of systems and things like that, future systems as well as present, establishing policy and trying to get all these various components, this huge apparatus, to work together and not against each other. And a lot of competing interests, a lot of lobbyists working for things all the time. It's going to be a tough job. You know, and people say, well, his deputies can handle that. Well, they can and they can't. They need a strong leader that understands the problems. He's good with managing large organizations. Span of control, it's usually 5 to 7 different people or sections. So you can usually manage 5 to 7 things in one person. When you get beyond that, you're really starting to get less efficient all the time. But what do you guys think? I'd like to hear what you have to think about some of Trump's appointments. I've heard some things about Tulsi Gabbard, former congresswoman from Hawaii, former National Guard officer. I think maybe she's still a lieutenant colonel in the Guard or the Reserves right now. I'm not sure. She held that rank. Director of National Intelligence, she is a real critic of the intelligence community. She was sympathetic to Bashar Assad of Syria. Did not believe that he was using chemical weapons, that he was set up. At least that's according to the statements she made while a member of Congress. Her peers in Congress did not have a high opinion of her. Of course, a lot of them were Democrats. That's understood, even though she herself was at that time a Democrat. I don't know. I don't know about her. She's the one that probably bothers me more than anybody else. I like her sometimes, some of the things she says. That bothers me. You've got Robert Kennedy, to be Health and Human Services Secretary. He doesn't like vaccines. They had an article that came out today. The lawyer said they were going to the Food and Drug Administration challenging the polio vaccine. Now, I look at that and I say, wait a minute. What do you mean you're challenging the polio vaccine? When I was a kid, back in the 1950s, there was always a kid in my class wearing braces on their legs because they had polio when they were younger. And we had, you know, March of Dimes to try to beat polio, and then Dr. Salt came out with his vaccine. I got the shots first, then I got the sugar cubes. And we were all the kids lined up on the block in our school, and I was in the first grade, and they're giving us this vaccine. Polio is a terrible disease. That's what Franklin Roosevelt had. That's what crippled him, and he suffered with it his whole adult life after he contracted the disease when he was in his 30s. Terrible, terrible disease. Now, I haven't heard any serious complaints about that vaccine not being reliable or safe in the United States. I don't know anything about stuff overseas. I've heard about stuff in India. Polio is pretty rampant over there. But why would you want to take an effective vaccine off the market and expose children to that? Now, I know the arguments about bundling all these vaccines together and people saying, well, my kid was fine. My child was fine, bright, happy, resilient, everything else. He got these massive vaccines and all of a sudden he's 4 years old and he's autistic. And they say there's no connection to that. I don't know. I have no idea what causes autism. I have my own theory, crackpot theory if you want. Has to do with nuclear testing and radiation back in the 50s and second, third generations down being affected by that. No proof, no scientific evidence whatsoever to that. Just a thought. But anyway, you know, vaccines, some vaccines have proven themselves to be effective. Maybe we need to be going back to what we did in the 50s and do one or two at a time. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm just responding to you asking about Tulsi Gabbard. I think she's fantastic. And I've listened to her comments about the Assads in Syria. And it's like, you know, what she said made sense to me. Syria didn't pose any kind of threat to the United States. And she was of the opinion that if there were some atrocities that Assad should face a criminal court for that. But she was very much against America going into a war that we don't need to go into.
Well, I agree with that. We don't need to get involved in that mess. We have people in Syria on behalf of the Kurds to protect them from the Turks as well as from ISIS, and primarily to help the Kurds defeat ISIS and keep ISIS in check so it doesn't take over Syria. That's been the extent of our involvement, less than 1,000 people plus some air support. But, yeah, that's a laudable objective because right now if you sending American soldiers out in these nefarious missions, you get mission creep, and you don't have a clear military objective to obtain. You don't have clear goals to obtain to get to those objectives in the end, which should always be victory for our side. What are we doing there? You know, you can't solve age-old conflicts with, you know, putting a 1,000 or so troops down there, supposedly going to hold the lines, like those French forts in Bojess, you know, out in the middle of the desert, trying to control, you know, desert tribes and who don't want anything to do with us, our culture, or anything else, and just trying to keep a lid on things. That doesn't work too good. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, she's highly intelligent. Her responses to any kind of question posed to her has been that of nothing but common sense to me. The fact that she left the Democrat Party tells me she's got a very critical thinking mind. She looked at the situation. I know there are people that are Democrats today not because they know anything about the party. A lot of people are Democrats because, hey, my mom and dad was a Democrat. And therefore, I'm a Democrat, and may have never went to a Catholic church, but they were born into being a Catholic, and yet, you know, never went to Catholic church. So what I'm saying is, she's got a critical thinking mind. She started off with the Democrat Party. She was a senator out of Hawaii, and then she just had her fill of the Democrat Party and came over to the Republican side. I really find that admirable.
Okay. I agree with you. I was born and raised a Democrat. My whole family pretty much are Democrats. I'm a Republican. My wife's a Republican. My kids are Republicans now. After Biden, even my youngest kids went from Democrat or independents went to Republican. But from that, you're right. You know, she is an independent. And we'll have to see what she does. Director of National Intelligence. Yeah, I'm kind of surprised he picked her for that. But that's what she is, and we'll see how she does. I just hope that the accusations against her prove to be unfounded. Like you had Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Democratic congresswoman, saying she shouldn't be trusted with America's secrets. She's a Russian agent. She said that on national TV. And I find that to be an appalling statement to make without any proof. And Gabbard obviously had no opportunity to respond. And we'll see how that works out. I can't imagine that she would be confirmed by the Senate if there was even a scintilla of proof that she was anything like that. We will find out in the coming weeks, and I'm not sure when her hearings will be, and we'll see how it goes. What do you think about the other appointments that he's made?
Well, I like all of them, actually.
Okay.
Here's the thing. What Trump is doing is making an honest effort to clean up the swamp. We've got corruption in our government in every corner. Every sector of our government is corrupt. And when you get someone that goes in there basically to shake things up and maybe flush the toilet a few times, maybe we'll get, something started in the right direction. The American government employs, what, about 20 million people. And I know they make a pretty good wage. And so think about how much that costs. I think someone projected it's over $1 trillion just in wages. Why not start cutting back? I get amazed when I hear them talk about government being overworked and understaffed, and they're talking about hiring someone new.
Well, like 12%
all they do is sit around.
I think only 12% of government federal employees actually are showing up at the office right now. That's ridiculous,
yeah.
And I think they need to go back to work. And that's outrageous. That's ridiculous. That's outrageous. They refuse to go back to the office because you wait in lines and things like that. Wait a long time to get things done. Social Security people don't want to go back to work. Working from home was one thing during COVID. That's long past. The rest of us have to go to work. They need to go to work too. I have another caller waiting. I have to take them. But hey, you have a great day and thanks for your call. Good call today. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Al. I like your program. Thank you. About Pete Hegseth.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I'm concerned about his background as far as CEO experience and thing, but it's kind of like I look at it like the president. It depends on who he pulls in. I mean, he's got so many people that he can tap to come in and assist him. I think that's really what's going to be his winning streak. I think the guy's smart. I think he's got a good record, and again, he just needs some good assistance.
You know, he's going to need a lot of it. I'll tell you, you know, taking on the Pentagon like that is like, I think I'm going to try to be learn how to be in rodeo. So the first thing you do on the very first day is pick out, you know, a wild bull, and you're going to go bull riding your very first day. You know, there's going to be a lot of resistance to him, and he's going to have some unpleasant experiences, I think. But because the Pentagon is a monster, it really is, in terms of being able to manage it. There's so many competing interests. When they built weapon systems, after the Vietnam War, they decided, well, we're not going to fight these battles like we did before. They made sure every congressman, every district had a piece of the action. So if you want to cancel something and go a different direction, you know, it's like trying to push a glacier uphill with just your hands. It's really hard to do. And that's kind of where he's at right now, what he's facing. He's going to have an enormous job, and I hope he gets the right people because that's what he's going to need. There's a lot of reform that needs to be done. 60% of the Pentagon's budget is salaries, and there's a huge number of civilian employees and bureaucratic red tape, and everybody gets a say in how things are done, and the result is virtually nothing gets done. And we have a huge deficit in terms of getting the right systems built and deployed to get out to the warfighters. And we don't have one-third of our submarine fleet right now is forced to be is dry docked because they're not certified as safe to go to sea. One-third of our attack submarines. And we're outnumbered by China in submarines right now, and they're building, they have the largest Navy in the world. We got to start producing like we produced in World War II. We're not even a scintilla close to that. Because that was a huge production.
Well, I agree with all that, but what the hell has Austin done? You know,
that's the problem. He's done nothing.
You got to get some new blood in there, and Pete might be the guy.
Let's hope he is. Hope he's able to make that work. He's got a big challenge.
Pardon me?
He's got a big challenge ahead of him. I'm all for him.
Oh,
I'm not
opposed
to him.
No doubt about it. I pray for him.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing people can do right now. Start praying for him, pray for Trump, pray for everybody that's working for him.
Yep.
Because they've got a huge uphill battle. Because the Democrats are doing everything they possibly can right now to sabotage the Trump presidency before he comes in. All the different things they're doing, from building the wall, putting policies, rules, regulations in, making appointments, changing procedures.
Yeah.
Like tying everything into a big knot. When your Christmas lights laid out nice and neat and someone goes in and just tangles them all up and throws them in your lap and get them up. It's kind of like that.
It's going to take four Trump presidencies to undo what Biden has done in one.
Well, he's only got one shot at this apple. He can do a lot in 4 years. I hope he gets as much done as he possibly can. We'll see.
Yeah, let's hope JD is a good follower.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a good man, too. So we'll see what happens and see what's happened to the country. All right. Well, thank you for your call.
All right. Thank you, Al.
All right, take care. I'm going to shift gears a little bit. I want to get this one in if I can. We only got a couple of minutes left here. You know, climate change. I know that's really low on your totem pole for things to be concerned about, but there's so much hysteria about that. About a month or so, they were talking about this glacier calving off in Greenland, and if it could actually raise sea levels by several feet globally if it went into the sea. Well, they just had another study come out from Dartmouth College, from Science Advance is what it's called, and basically Greenland is cooling. It's not warming. You know, global warming puts a lot of moisture in the air, things like that, but glaciers and mountaintops have a lot of snow cover, and they have the glaciers are formed not by the temperature, because it's cold up there. When you get up in those thousands of feet, it's really cold. It's by precipitation. And right now, the temperatures are cooling. The precipitation is there. And that's not supposed to be happening. And World Economic Forum was basically saying that if you have a total collapse of Greenland's ice sheet, could happen next year. And they said Greenland's glaciers' rapid melting may signal faster sea level rise, and so on. Well, the Thwaites Great Glacier, which is one they're talking about, is not actually doing that at all. Science Advances put out this study, and they talked about this collapse, this hysteria that was going around. That was part of a computer model. A computer model with data put in, modeling something that has never been observed by scientists anywhere. So basically, they create this hysteria, and they pump everybody up, and it turns out this glacier is not, in fact, going to collapse after all, or nowhere near it. And that's the kind of stuff that goes on. So the world's not going to end this week. And you can look at a thing called Science Advances, a study by Dartmouth College. It's the Thwaites Glacier. That's Thwaites. That's the one they've been talking about, the Doomsday Glacier. And right now, I don't think we have to be worrying about that too much. When your kids come home and they're worried about global warming and we're all going to die and it's all daddy's fault because he's running the lawnmower again, you can calm them down a little bit and just give them something else to look at. There's other stuff happening in the world that we need to be concerned about. Most important one is the damage that's being done by the Biden administration before they leave. They're doing everything they possibly can in every realm. They're trying to make deals with Ukraine. They're trying to make deals with the Iranians. Deals that will be very hard for us to get out from under, providing money and things like that to the Iranian government, buying them off, so to speak, so they don't develop nuclear weapons. And it's not working. They're pushing major aid packages out to Ukraine that probably, I don't know, you know, pushing all this stuff. They're depleting our own arsenals, putting us at risk with China, who's conducting the largest military exercises at sea in the Western Pacific that they've ever done, trying to intimidate Taiwan, which, if it goes, pretty much our economy would collapse because the chips that they manufacture by volume and quality basically run everything that we've got, our cars, our cell phones, everything. About 90%+ of the computer chips that make America work are manufactured in Taiwan, this humongous manufacturing complex. So these are the kind of things we need to be thinking about, paying attention to, and the Trump presidency can't get here soon enough, so we'll see what happens with that. What else have we got going on here? I talked about glaciers, illegal immigrants. You know, it's just incredible the things that are happening up there. You know, I think about all these people that have come into the country. And on one side, you have compassion for people. But when you have, you know, toddlers, two-year-olds showing up unaccompanied, says, how does that happen? How does a parent give a small child like the strangers to take across the border to a foreign country, paying thousands of dollars hoping it will happen? You have hundreds of thousands of children that have literally disappeared into the interior of this country without anyone having a clue where they're at. You've got criminals, hardened criminals being released from prisons that have come across our borders and are preying upon our people. It's really sick. It's really pathetic what's going on. And we're spending probably close to $1 trillion a year right now that could be used for everything from reducing the amount of money we're borrowing, which is increasing our national debt, to taking care of the people in our cities, to doing the infrastructure repairs we need to do. You can't save the world. You know, if you were a lifeboat and the Titanic sank, as much as you want to help 1,500 people out of the water, if you tried to take them all in one boat, your boat would be swamped and you'd sink and you'd all die. You can only sink or save a few, and you save who you can. And we're going to have to be resolute, and we're going to have to support the president to make it happen. We're out of time. We'll talk again next week. Have a good weekend.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by the Work Family Ranch, the perfect outdoor activity for any level rider. Book your horseback ride today, 805-467-3362, or go to workranch.com.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2 o'clock.